I'm Cheryl Corley, and this is News in Notes. Listen to this. The Electoral College. Sounds exciting, doesn't it? Well, you may not sit at home discussing the inner workings of the Electoral College. Well, I won't presume, but more than likely not. But it is key in deciding who gets into the White House. But does anyone really understand how it works? Here's what some people in Los Angeles had to say about it.
What I know about the Electoral College, I know from civics. So there's not really too much clarity as far as going on with that. So I don't know. Where there's no clarity, there's room for secrecy.
A college for, like, people to just go and learn and hang out and have fun.
I've never heard of it.
Well, it means each state has electoral votes. What I would like is that we would do away with electoral votes and that every man's vote is counted.
Well, here to help us demystify the Electoral College is Ange Marie Hancock. She's an assistant professor in political science at the University of Southern California and knows a thing or two about the Electoral College. Welcome to News and Notes.
Thanks for having me.
Well, so this is Voting 101, and I suppose we should begin by saying the Electoral College is really not a place. Is that right?
Exactly, exactly. It's a collection of people,
yeah,
and not an actual location of bricks and mortar buildings.
Yeah. Okay. So I thought you might have been a little alarmed by what people were saying on the street there.
I'd almost rather people didn't know rather than think it's a bricks and mortar location they can go to or protest.
Okay. So what's the history behind the college itself?
Well, the college has basically been around since the United States has been around. Mm-hmm. It is enshrined in our Constitution, which is why even though there have been periodic calls for its eradication, it's a very difficult process to get rid of it. It would take a constitutional amendment. And as we know, we've only done that 20 to 30 times in our entire history. So yeah, it is a very difficult process to get rid of. Essentially, however, there is a 538 electors that are basically redistributed every 10 years based on the census, the same way that the House of Representatives is redistributed in terms of numbers that each state gets. Every state, just like every state gets two senators, every state gets two electors. And then on top of that, based on population shifts, they will get a certain additional number of electors assigned to their states.
Does it correspond with the number of representatives? So what you said, two are for senators. And
right.
Then
so 100 of the electors are allocated that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then 435 are apportioned every 10 years based on the population shifts among the states. And then there are three electors that are given to the District of Columbia so that the District of Columbia can actually participate in the presidential election.
So talk a little bit about how these electors are chosen then.
The electors are actually chosen by the political parties. So based on the ways in which the voting takes place on Election Day, a slate of electors will then be put forth based on which candidate and which party actually won the presidential vote.
Mm-hmm.
Most times it's a winner-take-all situation. Only two states allocate by a congressional district or by proportional representation. So if Barack Obama or John McCain wins the state of California, for example, whichever candidate wins gets the entire slate of electors that their party has nominated to vote in the Electoral College.
Well, so talk a little bit more about that, because the Electoral College tends to kind of mirror the popular public vote in each state, if I'm correct. But are electors really required to do that?
There's no formal requirement that can happen. And so that's actually one of the arguments against the Electoral College, is that in certain situations it is possible in theory, although it hasn't happened in any time in recent history, that an elector could be bribed or an elector could be somehow swayed to vote against the actual slate that they were elected to represent.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so there was some debate about that, for example, in 2000, as to whether or not there might be some switching based on this idea that there were people who genuinely believed that Al Gore won. And if they were Republicans, they might actually do the right thing, if you will, or at least that was the hope among people who were supporters of Gore.
Explain how when these electors actually, I guess, either do their voting?
The electors actually are called to vote, obviously, after November 4th,
right.
after every election day. Uh-huh. They actually get together in their states and then cast the votes. And so the votes are reported from the states. There was a time when they were getting together in a centralized location, but they're no longer required to do so.
Mm-hmm. And that's when, during that time period, is when the actual influence could occur if anything like that actually happens.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Exactly.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. So you said that this has been with us from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So George Washington, John Adams, were they elected by the electoral colleges?
Actually, there was an electoral college after about four elections or so. And the electoral college has been around, but the shifts and the changes that took place, they had about four elections with an electoral college in one framework. And then they decided to make some adjustments as the emergence of political parties came around. And so what they did in the 12th Amendment, for example, was to actually go through and decide that they were going to have the Article 2 of the Constitution, said that they would be allocated by state. And then the 12th Amendment made a few changes, one of which was to stop them from actually going through and having to gather together in a centralized location.
Mm-hmm. Well, we heard from one man at the beginning of our little montage of people who said he'd like to see a one man, one vote system instead of this kind of indirect electoral college system. So what are the pitfalls of electing a president by popular vote?
Well, there are a couple of different pitfalls, and depending on, I guess, where you live, you might actually have different views on the particular perspective of whether we should have an electoral college. For example, the electoral college right now gives an undue weight to smaller states. So, for example, the state of Wyoming, if you cast a vote in the state of Wyoming based on the ways in which the electors are allocated, their vote actually counts four times the weight of someone voting in California, a much more populous state.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do truly believe in one man, one vote, then, of course, what you would have is to take care of that weighting problem so that the voters of Wyoming would have the same as California. On the other hand, what you might have is political parties and candidates running national campaigns and totally overlooking and bypassing some of those smaller states so that you would have an Obama or McCain not even bothering to ever stop in Wyoming, certainly not ever bothering to stop in some of the smaller states and concentrating all of their attention on the larger states.
Well, I'm sure that this will be a question that goes on and on and on throughout time. Thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That was Ange Marie Hancock. She's an assistant professor in political science at the University of Southern California and joined me here in our NPR West studios.